7BR Part Heard.
Hello and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. This week, I'm joined by Jaz Jandu to take a further look at the Financial Conduct Authority's recent work arising from COVID-19 and possible future approaches to diversity in the financial services sector. He also discusses his own diverse experience in his career to date. As a former commercial litigation solicitor with 8 years' experience as in-house counsel at the FCA, Jaz has over 15 years' experience advising and acting for UK and international corporates, individuals and public bodies, and he has particular expertise in financial services enforcement, financial crime and commercial litigation. Jaz, welcome to the podcast.
Hello.
In your webinar on the 29th of May, you took us through a number of actions that the FCA were taking to help consumers deal with some of the issues arising from the pandemic. And one issue was the fear of an increase in scams and frauds. Was that fear well-founded?
Yes, sadly it was. In August, CityWire reported on a Freedom of Information request which had been filed by a political think tank. And it turns out that apparently the FCA is investigating around 165 COVID-related scams right now. Now, the degree and depth of investigation is going to vary across those, but that is clearly a significant number. And to give you an idea of the scale of this sort of problem in monetary terms, the Investment Association, which is the UK trade body for investment managers, in August cited 300 cases of COVID-19 fraudsters convincing savers to purchase bogus investments. And this led to a total loss of over £4 million. So obviously, this is not small money. Now, the methods used by these fraudsters can include fake bonds, fake comparison websites, cloned brands, fake documents. Sometimes victims are targeted through sponsored Google and Facebook links. From my own work in this area on the claimant and prosecution side, they can be extremely organized in how they approach consumers. If you've ever watched the film Wolf of Wall Street, it is honestly quite similar to that sometimes in some of the cases I've seen. Now, the targets of these sorts of scams are wherever there is spare cash. And for some time, for example, self-invested personal pensions were often targeted. But all sorts of consumers are very vulnerable to these sorts of attacks right now.
So what can we do to help protect ourselves or others?
Well, I think there is an element of community engagement, which I think is really important. For example, if you've got relatives and friends who say they're thinking about new investments, including crypto assets or even more traditional products, but something new and exciting, and if you think it doesn't sound right, perhaps direct them to online resources before they proceed. Tell them to be cautious. For example, the FCA's got a website, a ScamSmart website, where people can look at the warnings about what's happening in the market and get a sense of what to watch out for. The thing is, once life savings are gone, they may never be recovered, even if a fraudster ends up in prison. So there really is a strong need for personal responsibility and awareness of all the sharks that are in the water.
What about firms who think they've been wrongly accused of being fraudsters?
Well, of course, that is important too. Everyone is entitled to a defence, whatever is alleged against them. And new ventures and investments can, of course, be entirely legitimate. It's possible the FCA, SFO, police or investors have misunderstood the transaction, or perhaps in good faith it was understood the investment product did not need regulation when it did. There are a lot of technical grey areas which investment providers can fall foul of, and there is a vast range of possibilities. It all depends on the facts of the case. I'm obviously very happy to assist defence solicitors on these issues if needed.
There was also an urgent FCA High Court case about business interruption insurance that you mentioned in your webinar. Perhaps you wouldn't mind just explaining a bit about that case and any developments since then.
Yes. So since COVID-19 became an issue, many businesses have been affected and have suffered significant loss of profits. And this led to claims being made on business interruption insurance policies. And those policies could, for example, cover issues that arise due to notifiable diseases or prevention of access to premises. But in some cases, insurers have disputed liability with policyholders. So there was a lot of uncertainty about which policies would respond and which wouldn't. The FCA decided it would bring a test case to urgently clarify these contractual issues. They placed a representative sample of 21 policy wordings from 8 insurers in front of the High Court. Now, it was in the public interest for the FCA to do this and put forward arguments on behalf of policyholders. And 370,000 policyholders were identified as holding policies that might be affected by this case. The eight insurers were also represented and put their points in defence of their positions too. This case was heard urgently in July. It was done online, and judgment was handed down on 15 September 2020.
So what was the decision in that case, and what happens next?
Well, the decision was that most, but not all, of the disease clauses in the samples provided cover, and some of the denial of access clauses also provided cover, but it depends on the detailed wording of the clause and how the business was affected by the government response. It is a complex judgment, but a summary is accessible via the FCA's website. Now, I understand the insurers will be contacting affected policyholders to progress matters next, but it is also possible that the judgment will be appealed, which should happen urgently if it is.
Do you think there are wider enforcement implications from this case for the FCA?
Yes, I do, because the nature of the action taken appears to be a novel approach for the FCA. It does not usually bring cases of this type on behalf of contractual parties in this way. In order to get this into court, the FCA, in fact, had to enter into a framework agreement with the insurers. And what that was an agreement which was very similar to a complex dispute resolution clause that you might see in a contract, setting out how they would litigate this case. Now, given the outcome here, I'm wondering if there might be calls for more FCA action of this sort. For example, in exceptional cases of public interest, why wouldn't consumer groups just say, FCA, do it again, we need your help? I imagine there may be some reluctance to do that at the FCA, as it was no doubt incredibly hard work to get this in to court. But it will hopefully be hugely helpful to small and medium-sized businesses who are policyholders. They would otherwise have really struggled to deal with this all on an individual basis against insurers.
So what's the best way for people to find out more information about this case?
Well, you could search online, and the case name is the Financial Conduct Authority against Arch Insurance UK Limited and others. But for useful summaries of the latest position, please do look at the FCA's website. The FCA have made a point of sharing as much information as they can, as soon as they can, and sometimes this happens on a day-to-day basis. And this is because it is an urgent live case and will have an impact on numerous businesses. For example, there was a further hearing just on 2nd October, and one of the outcomes was that the FCA and some of the insurers are now able to make a leapfrog appeal directly to the Supreme Court in order to resolve matters as soon as possible. And this would be instead of having to go to the Court of Appeal first, which is what the usual process would be. So it's really best to continue to check online for the very latest information. And I'll include a link to the FCA update page for this case on the written Q&A for this podcast.
That's great, Jez. Thank you. Diversity issues have also come to the fore for many people over the last few months. Will this have any impact in the city, do you think?
Yes, I think so. The new chief executive of the FCA, who just started on 1st October, is Nikhil Rathi. He has just moved to the FCA from the CEO post at the London Stock Exchange. Now, he is of minority ethnic heritage, so his appointment to head up the FCA is notable and good for diversity. But we know percentages of BAME and women in city leadership are not representative of society. And he made some interesting comments at a Treasury Select Committee in July on this issue. He said that he will expect boards and senior leadership in the city to deliver diversity and change cultures. And he suggested that if progress is not happening, at some point, it becomes an FCA supervisory matter. For example, city firms are still struggling to reach self-imposed gender diversity targets. So he has said he may consider looking at the FCA preventing certain appointments if diversity is not enhanced. He has also said he will personally lead efforts to increase diversity within the FCA itself. And he is open to using no-names shortlists to reduce bias, i.e. by removing names from CVs and applications.
Do you think he'll face challenges in addressing this?
Well, I agree entirely with the idea that leadership roles should represent society. But yes, one issue he will have is the inevitable pushback he will receive in the city. Even in a well-regulated market, the city is quite libertarian as to how it likes to run itself. So despite diversity being good for business, there are genuine competing views on how best to improve it.
And on the topic of diversity, you've had quite a diverse career. You were in-house counsel at the FCA from 2009 to 17, and prior to that qualified as a commercial litigator from 2004. Perhaps you could share some of your highlights from your earlier solicitor days.
Yes, in relation to this, I think I'd go all the way back to a highlight that has stayed with me all the way throughout my career from way back when I was a trainee solicitor at Allen & Overy before I qualified. I was lucky enough to obtain a secondment to the Chancery Division of the High Court. And while I was there, I sat with a High Court judge in court and in his chambers and assisted on all of his cases for 4 months. Now, they ranged from cases about misappropriated horses and business restructurings to international joint venture disputes between plumbing supply companies. Now, obviously, I'm sworn to secrecy on what we discussed in the judges' chambers, but I still think and reflect on that experience to this day alongside more recent experience. It really gave me an invaluable insight directly into the judicial mind at a very early stage. And I would really highly recommend that sort of experience to junior solicitors and barristers, as there are schemes available out there which they can apply for.
Finally then, Jazz, how do your wider experiences help you as a barrister now?
Well, since 2004, I worked on many different cases as a commercial litigator at various firms. And then I worked in-house at the FCA for about 8 years, as you've said, before I joined Chambers. I think this rich, diverse experience has really taught me about the needs of clients of various sizes and types, from individuals to small businesses to large complex companies and also public authorities. My work has taken me to the High Court, to tribunals, to the Crown Court, and to regulatory decisions committees. It's taught me about both the connections and distinctions between all these different forums. It's also helped me understand decision-making in large organizations and how cases are brought. And having an in-depth lived experience of how the FCA works and thinks, for example, I think can really help clients in dealing with them. So when I'm advising clients now, I really do try to bring as much of that experience to my work as possible.
Jazz, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of 7BR's Part Heard. To watch Jazz's webinar on the subject and to listen to our previous episodes, please visit our website. There you will also find a written Q&A with Jazz and some useful links for further information on the topics discussed, including the very latest position on the FCA's insurance test case.